You're good at lots of things, Leah. You get a great grade in podcasting.
Guys, I think we've got the cold open.
Okay, no, wrong. No. Zero.
Ixnay on the old opening keg.
Welcome to Tunnel Talk, a no facts, all feelings wrestling podcast. I'm Allie.
I'm Leah.
And our third co-host, Anne, is out of town this week. She was traveling. So we actually have a guest co-host who I'm so excited about. I wasn't here the last time you guys got to meet her when she showed up. This was right after the CM Punk.
It was before.
Right, before. So you heralded the beginning of the excitement.
Yeah.
And our guest's name is Sarah, friend of the pod. You hear about her almost every week. Yay. Sarah, say hi to the listeners.
Hi, listeners. How are you? It's nice to talk to you again. Wow.
We are so excited to have you back.
I'm so excited to be back. I'm always excited to come and visit and talk about wrestling. It's always an honor. Beside myself with excitement.
She's raising her hand so you know she means it.
As Leah said this week, she said, you've never done it with Allie before. And I was like, no, sure. I haven't.
An Allie virgin.
Yeah. And I think we're off to a great start and I'm loving everything that I'm hearing. We're right into our usual cornholing. And you know what I mean by that, listener.
Poor Buster.
Sarah, I was going to say that we could start off really quickly today by just kind of taking your temperature. We have spent most of the fall in agonies on this podcast. It's been a rough one. So I was just going to check in about where you've been at with AEW over the course of the past few months.
So I've been having a great time. I guess I haven't been overthinking things, to be completely honest with you. As Leah will attest, I have been infuriatingly placid.
Our energies in that living room have not matched.
We've had nights where
just the mental
she's
image
wanted to
of,
kill me and vice versa.
I've been infuriatingly placid, and the energy that Leah has brought to this podcast for the past few months, I agree, it's not a 100% match. Yeah.
I don't think things have been that bad. I have, in a vacuum, I've enjoyed the shows. I watched Dynamite and I enjoyed Dynamite. I watched Rampage and I enjoyed Rampage. Some of the shows are better than other shows. Do I feel like some things have been in a holding pattern? Sure. Mm-hmm. Has there been people featured more than I probably would have liked? Have there been people that I've missed? Absolutely. But overall, mm-hmm. the genuine quality of the programming, I think, is still pretty darn good. And I think it's funny for me, like, I'll watch a show and be like, oh, that was great. And then you go on the internet, it was like, it was a nightmare. AEW is dead. And I'm like, wow. But I like a lot of people on the show. So
yeah,
I just went along and had a good time.
You know, and I do think, in fairness, of course, Leah, there have been things that we have been really stressed about. But there's a lot of stuff that I think we take with equanimity. And we just say, wow, that was crazy. But that's life, baby.
And it's also true that I think a lot of the things that, like, really upset us this fall weren't actually taking place on Dynamite.
It's like, true. Dynamite took a backseat to the show of the internet wrestling community.
Yeah.
That has been kind of weird, actually, in recent weeks to start feeling more like, okay, so now I'm supposed to... So now I pay attention to wrestling again. And I don't pay as much attention to just, like, stuff people are saying about wrestling. That's interesting. Something new. Something to think about.
I feel like throughout the whole thing, I've been a little bit like I was right after the election in 2020, where a lot of people were like, what's going to happen? And I'm like, we're fine. Like, we're going to be great. Don't stress about Trump. Biden won. It's going to take him a week to call it. Don't freak out. And I feel like I've been kind of like that about, like, the elite are coming back. Punk's leaving. It's going to take him a while to call it. Don't freak out. Like,
yes, there will be an insurrection. Yes, they are going to. Chris Jericho is going to be at the White House trying to crawl in the windows. But that'll pass. It'll pass. And you'll love Chris Jericho again.
We'll get past it. It's going to be fine.
Well, I think
like I said, infuriatingly placid.
I think you bring an exciting new energy to this podcast that the listeners will never have experienced before, except for the last time you were here. We are going to start out tonight talking about the Elite versus Death Triangle, who are back on our screens, thank God, this week for Game 4, baby. Did you guys enjoy yourself? Tony started the show with it, which I thought was bold.
It was really bold, and honestly, I could have used, like, Jungle Boy versus Brian Cage to go there because I was not ready. And actually, Sarah and I were having a different discussion and weren't, like, we didn't even have the TV on. And so we, like, I want to say I kind of, like, blacked out for the first, like, minute or two where I was, like, emotionally I'm not prepared to see Matt Jackson, but I did see him.
Yeah, well, you have no choice. I mean, I agree. I like a little time to kind of get into the world of wrestling, and then I see my faves. Tony doesn't always agree with that.
It was definitely a, like Leah said, the clock started going, and I went, oh my God, it's 8 o'clock, and then I had to turn the TV on and switch it to the cable input and make sure I was on the right channel. The whole time I'm stressed out that I'm missing something, and it's just fireworks and Excalibur shouting. And then the Elite came out right away, and it was tremendous. Yeah. Even though, can I make a confession?
Oh, please.
Can I confess to something?
I'm nervous, but yes.
I don't really like Wayward Son as an entrance song.
Okay, that's okay to say.
Is that the worst thing that's ever happened?
No,
that's okay.
Yeah.
I think that the thing I like most about it is the amount of joy it seems to bring Matt Jackson.
Yeah.
Like, that's so important to me that he'd be happy.
Right. The karaoke is really, like, watching them sing along to it makes them so happy. I agree that this... I'm not exactly sure why they identify so strongly with that song, but it's fine.
Well, Kenny talked them into it, and what Kenny wants, Kenny gets. Well, I guess they wanted it themselves too, actually. So it's special to them, and what's special to them is special to me. But I like the experience of it, but I agree it's not like everything to me. So this week, we were back in our little narrative where, Penta and Pac are desperate to do cheating, and, Fenix didn't feature as much in this one as the standout, I don't want to cheat guy, but we had a storyline where, Nick hurt his ankle and then he was out for a while and Matt and Kenny were kind of like fighting to stay in the mix. Nick came back, he wanted to get put back in. He did. He was kind of laying waste, and then Penta hammered his ankle. What do you guys think about the storytelling, about the amazing storytelling from our beautiful boys?
They were having so much fun. Nick's like theatrical, like rubbing at his ankle at first, and then like talking concernedly, and then like he was just doing like a lot of like, oh, I think it like twinges. Oh, it's, you know, it's getting worse. I want to work
through it, but I'm not sure I can.
And like the points where like Kenny kept trying to tag him in and Nick was like, no, it was like cracking me up.
It made me a little bit nervous at the beginning because this happens a lot with a lot of these kayfabe injuries where I'm like, oh my God, are they really hurt? And then I get mad at myself for buying into it, even though I know they're not really hurt because I can just sort of tell by the way they're playing it. Mm-hmm. Like, we've seen them actually be hurt and they handle it so differently. And then I looked at Twitter briefly and Twitter was like, oh, they're doing this basketball storyline. And I can't remember the name of the player, where like the player went out in the middle of the game and then came back and scored like some insane number of points, which I was like, Nick is all over this because of the basketball references, obviously.
Yeah.
And I think that like you could see that with the music this week, like they're really leaning into the whole NBA comparison for the best of seven, which they're having so much fun with. And Tony is like, sure, I'll buy this music. That sounds like a good time. So I enjoyed it. I liked the story. I liked that they sort of swerved you at the end where you're like, oh, Nick's going to come back. He's going to lay waste and he's going to win. And then no, that didn't actually happen, which I thought was even better.
Yeah, I agree. I really like that it didn't go there. I liked Kenny's little post-match promo that he said he wasn't slated to cut. And with Kenny, I actually can't read Kenny at all sometimes. So I'm like, I have no idea. Yeah, it could have been. I think that probably you were, but I wouldn't like bet money on it.
There's no way to know. I felt like there was a couple of points where Excalibur was trying to talk over him to the point where I was like, maybe Excalibur doesn't know that he's doing, like, it was production wise. I was like, is he supposed to do this? But it worked. I was fine with it.
I thought it was great. I mean, it's like, it's kind of weird. I just like Kenny was out for so long. I haven't seen him like do things in a long time that sometimes when he's talking, I'm just like, wait a second, that's Kenny. He's just there.
Watching him last night, I turned to Leah at one point and I was like, you couldn't tell before he went out that that, but then you're like, oh, he was hurt because like the way he's moving now is so much different. Like he's so much faster and crisper and just like his moves are more impactful that you're like, boy, he really was hurt right before he went out like big time that summer.
And that was, I think that like that final match about, with Hangman was the probably the only time that I was kind of like, this is a great match. I'm loving it. But I do feel like I know that, that you're like kind of moving a little weird, even though I think obviously it was a great match, but I agree. Like Kenny has big cat energy now where I'm just like, wow, that is a tiger that could kill me. And that's not how I fully used to feel about him. He just seems like so healthy and great.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's happy to be there.
He's happy to be, and we're happy to have you. Did you guys think, what did you guys think about the crowd reactions for this match? That was the thing that interested me about this storytelling is that like that when they came out, like it really did feel like the crowd was happy to see them. Great crowd all night long. Love the crowd. But where they were like the Elite are the heels to us, kind, you know, kind of, and Death Triangle are the faces to us. Did you guys feel like they were like kind of doing, like they're doing a whole thing on purpose or no?
I thought the audience reaction at the start was 50-50, but I thought throughout the match it was that they fully got the Bucks were the baby faces by the end, or the Elite were the baby faces by the end. I don't think, I feel like it was the first one they've done since Newark where it was a clear Elite are playing baby faces in the match thing.
I agree, but I felt like they worked them around. Like at the beginning, I didn't think it felt that clear, and I think if the to me the crowd felt like they could go either way, kind of. And then the I loved. I mean, I just liked. I was like, the plot of the match is like, no, we are the baby faces, and you will admit it. And they were like, we admit it. We do admit it. Yes,
they just don't get enough credit for their ability to control a crowd. No. They could be cult leaders if they wanted to.
They kind of are. I mean, we're kind of in their cult.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Leah, you're fully in a cult.
Getting called out. Do you guys, I don't like that Kenny hasn't been doing any skits on BTE.
I know. I know. He's like barely on it. I wonder why.
I don't know. I feel worried about it. Let's quickly talk about, Sarah, you had some NJPW items to do with the Elite. Oh, we didn't even say. So Kenny's promo was saying, like, the next match is going to be no DQ, and then assuming we go to seven matches, we're going to get a falls count anywhere and a ladder match. I my guess is that we'll go to seven matches, but, you know, prove me wrong, baby.
I know. It's like they could swerve at any time. Like who knows? But I'm like, the second I saw the ladder match was at the end, I was like, they're going to seven.
Yeah. You think those guys aren't going to do a ladder match? Come on.
I'm glad they're doing it, to be honest with you, because as much as I have enjoyed these matches, I will say that last night I was like a tiny bit on, okay, I've seen a lot of this lately. Like, again, the storyline was great. The matches are phenomenal. But I think that's very hard to hold seven matches with no stipulations, nothing different as, you know, not blending together in some way. So when he said we're going to do no DQ Net Lad next week, I was kind of like, okay, you know, like mix it up a little bit. Like, I'm ready for this.
Yeah, it definitely felt like the right time to move into it. So what you brought to us is, this has been the ongoing conversation in the old IWC, is Kota Ibushi, his NJPW contract is either up or about to be up at the end of the year. So there's an expectation that he will be somewhere new in January, and I believe he is purportedly, he's ready to wrestle.
Yeah, so there was a big Voices of Wrestling report last week that essentially said that Kota has been ready for a while, or Bushi's been ready for a while, but he's playing up his injury in kayfabe, so, you know, because of course he is. So he and New Japan kind of came to an agreement that he would just sit it out and wait till the end of his contract and then be on his way. So apparently Noah has offered him a ton of money. AEW, he said in a tweet that AEW had offered him a contract, but he wants to create his own promotion. And, like, you know, it's Ibushi, so he's saying all sorts of weird shit. He tweeted a picture of himself with Kenny and Stone Cold Steve Austin and somebody else who I think was Diamond Dallas Page, but I could be wrong about that. Please don't be mad at me if I am. And podcast. He's like, what will come next? So I think given that Ibushi wants to stay in Japan itself and obviously his mom is there and yada, 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 I don't think he will sign with AEW, but given how much Kenny is talking about him all of a sudden, like that whole interview that he did with that Pro Wrestling magazine in Japan, which was like, mostly Will Ospreay bashing, and then like a bunch of like CODA stuff with like at the end with Nakazawa being like, I'll take him the protein powders because we want him to heal better. Like, Jesus Christmas, you know, like. So I think even if Ibushi doesn't sign with AEW, he will show up in AEW at some point. And again, there's a lot of stuff going on with New Japan. Obviously, Wrestle Kingdom is on the 4th, and FTR will be there, and Kenny will be there. And then there's apparently going to be another Wrestle Kingdom show later in January. I think it might be the 16th or 17th. And there's no information about that yet, because New Japan doesn't usually do information about a pay-per-view until the one's done, like a show until the one's done. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of rumors that it's going to be a crossover. So whether it's going to be a crossover with AEW, whether it's going to be a crossover with Noah again, you know, but it's a Saturday night. It's the end of the West Coast tour that AEW is doing. So there's a bunch of reasons why people think that you could see a lot of AEW people at that show.
That's exciting. I think it's exciting too. Like, I hope Ibushi comes to AEW because I want to watch the Elite get dysregulated. That's mm-hmm. that's my New Year's wish. I want to watch Mommy's Little Rat Boys have a horrible year because emotionally in exactly. kayfabe for a change.
I want Ibushi to come in and just throw a wrench between Kenny and the Bucks. Mm-hmm. I want them to all of a sudden feel very off, like not on the same page. Mm-hmm. And I want to see them do skits about it. Is that so wrong?
No, I think you're exactly right. I think that's what we all want, I hope. And I think it's also, it does just feel good to feel like, it's like, all of these matches with Death Triangle were kind of like bringing the Elite back into the fold. But it's exciting to see like stuff hopefully getting set up like, okay, and you guys are going to do like more storylines. You're going to be able to get back to storylines that you had to drop for like about a billion reasons over the past year, actually. That excites me.
I think there's a lot of cool stuff you could do with Ibushi and, you know, and like, especially with the lead. And I'm just like, I'm ready for some storylines to advance in different directions. Mm-hmm. Right. And maybe that's part of why I was like, not frustrated with the match last night, but that tiny part of me that was like, I'm enjoying this, but I just saw this 2 weeks ago and I know I have three more of these to watch. They could be a little bit different. And what else could be happening? So, and that's ridiculous because I should be grateful for the wrestling that I am getting, but it's kind of the nature of, I think, fandom to be like, but what's next?
Yeah. It is, and I think also it's like we know that they like to tell interesting stories and they like to emotionally dysregulate each other. So I have had my eye kind of on like, okay, like we're doing the Death Triangle thing, but I think like some stuff has got to start cropping up that is different than that because you guys like laying the stage for like the mm-hmm. next scene. So it's exciting to feel like maybe that'll be happening. Let's jump to talking about, we're going to come back to some Elite stuff later, but let's jump to talking about MJF. So MJF and Ricky Starks had their big, this was like their double match for the Big Beautiful Belt and also the Dynamite Diamond Ring. This was the main event of Dynamite this week. They both got promos on the show. I tried to recap these and then I was like, they were totally normal, good promos. Like, did you guys have a take different than that? They were
no.
good and fine.
Yeah, they were fine.
Great. And then they had like a 15-ish minute fight. I thought it was really good. MJF won by kind of distracting the ref at one point, kneeing Ricky in the groin and pinning him. So what do you guys think about just overall, like how the build to this was and how it went down?
I think it started pretty rough. Like, I think like they kind of signaled pretty early that like Bryan Danielson was going to be a big rival. And so it kind of felt like, oh, like he's just got to get through the Ricky match to get mm-hmm. to Bryan Danielson. But I think like, at some point, somebody became very cognizant of that. All of a sudden, MJF started taking Ricky very seriously. And all of a sudden, yeah. he was doing good promos. He was, you know, like, all of a sudden, it started to count. I do think they made a huge mistake by not giving Ricky the ring. Like, I think they linking these two together was stupid. Like, they could have done that. But I don't know.
He'll never go to Mordor now.
He'll never go to Mordor now. Sauron's gonna keep the fucking ring.
I thought it was good. I like Ricky Starks. I like MJF. I thought it was kind of predictable, but I enjoyed the journey. And both guys worked very, very, very hard mm-hmm. to get everybody interested, to get us all to care. You know, the fact that they did it in Texas made, you know, gave Ricky that extra oomph and gave MJF a little more heat for it. And I appreciated that they tied in the part where you were kind of looking past Ricky Starks to MJF. or to Bryan Danielson rather, and that they kind of made that a plot point for Ricky with his promo, like, yeah, you know, you're not even paying attention to me, and I'm so much better than you think, which I thought was really smart.
Right. Yeah.
But, you know, I don't think, like you said, I don't think anybody expected them, MJF, not to win, and I think separating the belt and the ring would have been a little bit more interesting. But I think that's sort of similar to what they did with the FTW belts and Team Taz, right? Like, there were a lot of times where we were like, well, it'd be cool if someone else won the FTW belts, and no one ever did.
Yeah.
I can't really remember back that far, to be honest. You may be right.
Damn me for bringing in history.
Sarah, I did ask you in our schedule if you could talk a little bit about, like, your take on MJF's wrestling, because I feel like I'm, like, always hearing things and not really knowing how people feel. And I like his wrestling. You seem very confident. Speak to us.
I think, listen, MJF is a phenomenal wrestler. He's a really good wrestler, but he's kind of like an old school 80s type wrestler. He's not, and I'm going to say flashy, and Leah's going to get mad. Mm-hmm. He's not like a lucha flashy spot guy, which...
He's not one of those elite show-offs, Leah, okay?
He's not a spot monkey like the fucking Bucks.
But he's really, really good at it. I mean, if you look at the matches that MJF has had, I don't think he's had a bad one. I mean, you think back to Full Gear last year and his match with Darby, which I think was the best match on the card. I mean, so those fucking guys were incredible.
Yeah.
But I think MJF has wrestled twice since Double or Nothing, and Double or Nothing itself was just Wardlow squashing him, right? Yeah. So he hasn't really had a lot of matches. And MJF, Ricky and Moxley could not be any different in terms of style. And I also think on top of that, MJF has put on a lot of muscle. And I think he maybe was struggling a tiny bit with how his body is different. And you could see even when Ricky tried to put him up for two power bombs or slams or whatever, and both times botched it and had to redo them. Because I think that it's just this, you know, he's not used to being maybe 20 pounds heavier with muscle, which is great. He looks great, but your body does change.
Right. What you're saying to me right now is so sexy. A man is confused by his changing body. Wow.
I'm bringing it tonight. I'm like, A game is right here, Allie.
I you know, game four, you are winning. I think that's a really good point. I really enjoyed the match. We did have afterwards, Bryan Danielson, MJF was like retreating and leaving, and Bryan Danielson came out, and the energy that man brought to, his pursuit of MJF had to skedaddle out through the crowd. Mwah, beautiful.
Just the full-on run, like absolutely, like the dash through the crowd had me howling, and every still from it is comedy. It's comedy.
Can I check in? Do you guys think that was a different cut of panty for MJF, or was it the same?
No,
it was the same.
It's the same. Because it's the same.
It looked like not high rise, but like there was a lot of cheek showing.
It's his body.
He always has a lot of cheek showing.
His body has changed. Yeah. I guess he's filling them out better because they used to look a little, you know.
Yeah. I saw a picture of him. I don't remember from what, but like his thighs. I was like, I don't think his thighs have always looked like that.
No. We're confused by his changing body. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't look the same as it did.
How is this possible? He stepped on the gas.
He stepped on the gas. Do you guys have any thoughts about so MJF is clearly going to move into something with Bryan Danielson. So thoughts about like what you'd like to see next for Ricky, or what you think we will see next for Ricky, and just any general thoughts about that Bryan Danielson storyline, what it could look like.
I'd love to see Ricky in a non-belt struggle, but I don't know exactly. I think like it could be good if he went back to Ethan, but and just had like a very...
Okay.
Did I say it like an ex-boyfriend?
Absolutely. You're like, it was a mistake for him ever to leave Ethan. I think we'd all like to see him go back to Ethan.
I don't know. I think like if he did like an interesting like back and forth for a couple weeks, it could be very fun rather than these very... I mean, like he did have a longer feud with Hobbs, but that never got satisfying. So I don't know. I just want to see him. I want to see him get really into it with someone over maybe like a month.
Mm-hmm.
There was some speculation that because Jericho mentioned Ricky Starks last night that he might move into a feud with Jericho, which I frankly wouldn't be opposed to. I think the two of them could do interesting promos and interesting, you know. I mean, there's a... Your face.
You keep talking, Sarah, but Leah's face is really something, listeners.
I mean, if you want to elevate Ricky Starks to an upper tier, right, you want to put him at the top of the card, he's got to fight other top of the card guys. Name somebody he could fight right now that, you know, Jericho's got to be right up there, right? Was he going to fight Claudio? Like, you know, all the other guys are busy. Like, this is where you're like, all right, it makes sense. And, you know, it'll go on for 10 months. We'll all be sick by the end of it.
How do we have so many wrestlers, but literally every time we try to find like a feud for someone, I feel like we are in the "we miscounted the men" moment where I'm just like, where did they all go? Where are they?
I don't disagree with what you're saying. Like he needs a top level feud. Jericho will do a good job, blah, 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 blah. But when I try to think about these men existing next to each other,
your brain is broken
talking to each other, like they'll touch each other. Are you sure
that old man will lay hands on Ricky? I don't know
if I back it. I just don't know.
I have no idea. I think maybe I'm also not sure because I currently feel complete. I don't even have a guess about what is going to be going on with Jazz. I mean, I kind of do, but there's a lot of uncertainty there for me.
Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, I think there's just the Jericho Appreciation Society is suffering from, I think, Dark Order Syndrome, which is they're too big. They're too big. Mm-hmm. Who are they going to feud with? Like, there's, you know, they're not the other faction big enough to potentially feud with them is like the Factory, Best Friends. Best Friends already has done a feud with Jericho. Like, they're not going to go back to that. Like, they kind of have to disband them a little bit in order for them to, you know, be able to really be effective. And quite frankly, I think they should because the tag division needs 2.0 desperately. Yeah. I mean, yes. A 2.0 feud with the Acclaimed would be fucking money all day.
Now you're.
Come
See,
on!
You got me upset with the Ricky or Jericho, but you've brought me back with 2.0.
I want that so bad. They've been so mixed up with Jericho, and it's like it's been great. They're doing great work, but I basically forgot that we could have them as a tag team doing stuff. And of course, I would so much rather have that than the Jeff Jarrett Jay Lethal thing that actually we have no time to talk about. And we're actually just now going to move on to our next topic, which is just a quick check in on the ROH pay per view. So Sarah, you watched, we didn't. I've read a little about it. Do you want to just give us like, what do you think the highlights were of the pay-per-view?
It was good. I've enjoyed all of the, you know, post-Tony Khan Ring of Honor pay-per-views. I haven't felt like I wasted my money. They're enjoyable shows. This one was 4 o'clock on a Saturday, which is right in my wheelhouse in terms of like when I can go to bed. So there were some... There were some enjoyable matches in there, and it helped me change a little bit of my opinions on folks. Like, the Kingdom did a great job in their feud with Top Flight. That was a great match. I really enjoyed that. I was like, okay, I'm on the Kingdom train a little bit now. I'm not as much like, who? Question mark? Like, I still can't stand the white gloves, but I'm into it, right? Maria Kanellis was phenomenal. I loved it. The other stuff was the Athena's match with Mercedes was a freaking brawl. Those two women beat the shit out of each other, and I lived for every second of it. It was phenomenal. I love to see women just fucking fighting. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
And I enjoy a good wrestling match, but you have two strong, good wrestlers who just were not afraid to work hard, and they both did a phenomenal job. It was great to see Athena win the belt in her hometown.
Yeah.
In her town, say that awkwardly. And obviously FTR versus Briscoe's 3 was, you know, and I said this in our write-up, but it was a phenomenal match and I logically appreciated it as terrific. But it was almost too violent for me that I couldn't relax enough to enjoy it because I was like, someone is going to die. Like, at one point, Cash Wheeler took one of the Briscoes and did like a superplex off the top rope turnbuckle onto chairs on the floor. Okay? Ooh. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it was painful to watch. And that was like, I mean, it was rough. So I thought it was absolutely incredible. Those guys did an absolutely amazing job. But I was like, whoa. Poor Samoa Joe and Juice Robinson had to follow them. And they put on a show as much as they wanted to. It was great. I'm enjoying Samoa Joe a lot more, but there wasn't much to that. And then Claudio and Jericho was an enjoyable match. But, you know, other than getting some uninterrupted time and no commercial break, I don't know. I would say it was that much different than any of their Dynamite matches. So,
sure.
But overall, the show was great. You know, obviously, Claudio winning was a big piece of the stuff. The Swerve in Our Glory match, basically, it was an inverse of what happened at Full Gear, where instead of Keith Lee walking out on Swerve, Swerve walked out on Keith Lee. But Keith Lee still beat Shane Taylor Promotions by himself.
I honestly lost it at that the promo that Swerve then cut on Dynamite this week as like a follow-up to kind of explain. I don't even remember exactly what I said, but I was like listening to it and it was such a comedy. Like it was a great heel promo because you listened and you were just like, footage not found. You absolutely are the problem. But I love this promo in which you're convinced that somebody else is the problem.
He said, I've given you everything. Like, no, you didn't. You didn't give him shit.
It's like from day one, you've been trying to beat your own tag partner up.
It was definitely a rough match at times because Shane Taylor is, again, just like Keith Lee, is a big guy. And so you had two very big guys with two smaller flippy guys. And R.D. Griffey, I think is his name, R.J. Griffey. Griffey is not as good as Swerve, so it was a little bit of a tougher in moments. But there was an emotional component there because it was like Keith Lee was torn between his old tag partners who felt he'd betrayed him and yada, yada, yada. It was a good show. I enjoyed it. I was happy to see all the people, and I'd be happy to see them again.
Well, so what are you, both you and Leah, what are your thoughts then about after the show, Tony Khan was like, Ring of Honor is going to go on to a like $10 a month service, Honor Club, for now, I think was his vibe, was like, it's not going to TV for now, but we're going to get weekly shows on Honor Club. Is that right?
Sarah can speak to it with more detail, but I'll just say, if that means that I see less of it, I'm in favor.
I do sometimes feel like we really let Tony, like Tony was like, when they see Ring of Honor, they're going to love Ring of Honor. And we're like, oh, our hearts were hardened to Ring of Honor immediately. We just like to get what we expected to get. And he couldn't talk us around. And this feels like him being like the girls, what can I say? I gave the girls a great show and they didn't like it. But yeah, Sarah, what do you think?
I think he clearly wanted a TV show for it that was going to be on actual TV. I think Trevor Dame had brought up a really good point that no one answered, was whether or not Tony can sell a wrestling TV show to a non-Warner Brothers Discovery network, right? If he can't do that contractually, then it kind of changes things a little bit, right? He couldn't sell it to some of these other channels. It makes it slightly less of a failure. It's still a failure, but it's maybe not as horrifying as one. I think him coming to an end point of being like, okay, I haven't gotten a TV deal. It's the end of the year. It's moving to Honor Club. We're just sucking it up and dealing with it and moving on from there. You know, I think it's going to be interesting to see, you know, are they going to film before Dynamite? Are they going to film like a studio show in Orlando? The stuff about New Japan's involvement is going to be really interesting to see how that plays out, because he did hint very strongly, since they're not making any announcements till after Wrestle Kingdom, there's some conjecture that it could be New Japan Strong appearing on Honor Club, whether it's going to be its own show on Honor Club or whether it be a separate show, which obviously gives you more bang for the $10. But I think it's going to be interesting to see. And I had some questions about, like, well, if he says he's going to have less Ring of Honor on AEW, how's that going to work out? But you could see this week, the Ring of Honor, the AEW wrestlers with Ring of Honor belts still were showing off those belts.
Yeah.
So
it really,
you know,
doesn't,
we'll see,
seem
how it
like it'll be possible to completely pull them apart in any way, especially because presumably, like, he wants, like, some of those names he has on AEW, it would be useful to have them on Ring of Honor. So I feel like we have to have permeability, probably. And for me, as long as we bring down the amount of Ring of Honor I'm seeing, then I'm happy to see it sometimes, as long as it's, you know, explained to me. And I thought that, like, the Swerve video package this week was, like, perfectly good. Or even, like, just Mox's promo being, like, Claudio swung Jericho around till he puked or whatever. It's like, yeah, that's fine. I don't need to know more than that. it'll just be interesting to see how that shakes out. Speaking of Jericho, let's get into him. So at at Ring of Honor, Jericho and Daniel Garcia both lost their belts. So that's a rough week for the crew. This week on Dynamite, Jazz cut a group promo in which Jericho was like clearly was disappointed in Daniel Garcia and assigned Sammy to be his mentor.
The absolute humiliation of someone saying that Danny Garcia has to learn from Sammy, that Sammy's going to be his accountability buddy? Are you kidding me?
I love the return of the accountability buddy concept too. I mean, that's a good one to circle back around.
It was the greatest part of the Pinnacle.
I loved it. I thought it was phenomenal. Daniel Garcia having to try to shove the overly tanned hand of Sammy Guevara off of his shoulder multiple times and just keep getting brought in was just the most incredible thing I've ever seen. This I found kind of interesting, right? So obviously in real life, Sammy Guevara has like 10 years of wrestling experience and Daniel Garcia has 5. So he has more, but I feel like kayfabe Sammy comes across as a lot younger and more inexperienced, mm-hmm. right?
10 years younger. We were shocked when we found out how old Sammy is.
Right. So this was my only thing that I thought, you know, it's Jericho and the guy loves a storyline. This to me sort of kind of called a little bit back to the Punk Hangman, you know, he won't take advice stuff of like, I want to mentor you and we are the same age and have the same amount of experience. Or in Punk and Hangman's case, they have they're different ages, but you know, they, given the break, roughly been wrestling for about the same amount of time. So that was something that kind of struck me as I was watching it, but it could be a complete and total coincidence. And if it isn't, I chuckled. If it is, I chuckled. So either way, I enjoyed that.
It wouldn't surprise me at all. I think Chris Jericho is quite petty and he does love his little digs. And I feel like his digs sometimes, not always, but sometimes are more subtle than like what you'll get from like the Bucks complimentary, where it's like the Bucks on BTE are like, yeah, it's going to be so loud. You're going to love our loud joke about what our mean friend Kenny said to the locker room. So then the other thing that happened here was that Jericho very confidently said he had to go squash a jobber to feel better. And he went out to squash the jobber and commentary expected him to squash the jobber. And we were all waiting for him to squash the jobber. And he lost to the jobber, Action Andretti, who is immediately after the announced is All Elite. What did you guys think of the zag?
I thought it was fantastic. The fact that like commentary was like, well, this is going to be a quick match. And I like looked away, like I started doing something and then like glanced up and was like, is he still on? And I was like, oh, they're giving him some defense. Oh, this has been going on a long time. And then it's like, you put the computer down and sit up and you're like, they're like really letting this guy wail on Chris Jericho. And then when he ever won, I was like, what just happened?
I'm so glad you're here for this, Allie, because I keep thinking back to that night that we sat and talked about how much we love Chris Jericho and how great he is. And I felt like I had like dub conned you into like acknowledging that Chris Jericho's the GOAT. And, you know, like, listen, there's no ethical standing in wrestling, and I understand that, but fucking Chris Jericho is the GOAT. I'm sorry. And he's having an absolutely incredible year. He's done, yes, the JAS BCC feud went on a long time. There's no arguing that. I don't know that that's something that was Jericho's decision as much as it was something that kind of got thrust upon them because of circumstance. Regardless, Jericho, the Ocho stuff, the stuff he did with Ring of Jericho was phenomenal. I fucking loved all of those defenses. His in-ring work has been incredible. The stuff he did last night with laying the groundwork of being like, I'm like you said, I'm going to go out and make this guy make feel better. And then the facial expressions that he was giving in the ring. Like the guy kicked out of the Codebreaker and Jericho, you almost saw Jericho in that moment come to the realization that he was going to lose. Mm-hmm. Like in the moment of like, you were like, oh shit, he knows he's going to lose now. Like, and then like, he's literally in the ring crying after he got pinned. Like what a fucking, like, God, the guy's goated. Like I fucking loved it. It was phenomenal. It was Jericho's idea. He picked Andretti. He thought it was going to be great. I think the idea of a Jericho storyline where he spirals because he can't win.
Great.
Oh my God. Give me that with two hands and a spoon. I mean,
absolutely.
Come on.
Like that tantrum he threw afterwards where they like cut to him and he was just throwing things backstage was really, really funny. He's like, he is a comedy king.
And the thing is, it's like, we've talked about this. Jericho will not with the feuds go on for too long. And I don't think anyone seems to really understand always why. I mean, part of it is probably like the degree of Jericho's stardom. Like, you have to have him on the show. You're not trying to start up a new feud every 5 seconds. I think there's some stuff like that that contributes, but we all pretty much everybody seems to agree they go on too long. And yet Chris Jericho also is a person who is like, I don't want to bore you. Like, I want to do something new with me. Like, I want to find some new thing to show you, like, of myself. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. He never seems that worried about it. Like, he's like, yeah, sometimes it hits. You dig around till you find out what hits. I agree that I would love to see Jericho spiral, which I feel like is something we haven't really seen. Mm-hmm. It would be new. It would be cool. And his face acting was real. Face acting, I have to say. I fully agree, where I was like, yeah, you look like a real guy who's really shocked and trying to take in what just happened.
Allie, do you think he wins Mommy's Little Ham Award this week?
No, almost not really, because it was almost too good at face acting.
It wasn't hammy enough. I think Jericho is always trying something new, like you said. He's not, you know, and I think for Jericho, he's lost other feuds before, and he's lost other feuds as a heel and continued to be a cocky fucking asshole, right? Mm-hmm. And I feel like for him to lose this and not be a cocky asshole is also sort of how you get down, you start to break up the JAS, right? Because how can you appreciate Jericho if he's not winning?
Right.
Like,
yes.
There's your out. Like,
it's
good shit. I fucking love it. I loved the whole setup of the whole thing. Everybody played into it beautifully. Excalibur did an incredible job. Like, they even set the match up, because so many times in AEW, you see these like hero moments where the underdog fires up and you're like, oh my God. And then of course they, you know, well, Jericho's still going to win. And he didn't.
Yeah.
And you can't do that too often, because if you do, it's going to, like, it won't be a surprise anymore. But yeah, God, that was great.
I mean, the way that you described it, Leah, like your experience, it's like that must have been what he imagined it would be like. And I agree, it's what it was like for me too, where you're just tuned out and then slowly you tune in. And, you know, it is goat stuff to be like, I know that's how people will respond. I know that's how this is going to go. I know it'll work. And it did work. It was great.
It did work. Yeah.
And everyone, and the crowd cheered so big for a little Action Andretti with his beautiful curls.
That is the quickest that I have ever speed run through loving a wrestler since I met Willow Nightingale. You know, like, yeah. I was like, I don't know this man. And then by like the end of the match, I was like, is Action Andretti my son? He might be. He's got a little mommy face.
He may be a mommy.
The thing that Jericho did, where the crowd's chanting, let's go jobber, and then the crowd quiets down a little bit, and Jericho has Andretti in the corner, and he starts screaming, come on, Action, in a derogatory way. But he's telegraphing to the audience what the fucking guy's name is. Yeah. And so all of a sudden, the crowd starts cheering, let's go, Action, and you're like, God, the guy's a genius. Like, this is the shit that puts Jericho in that upper level of, like, fucking goats. I'm sorry. Yeah.
He's so good. We've always loved Jericho. Of course, we've always loved Jericho.
And I think we like endorse everything about him, I would say.
Pretty much everything. We're just kidding. It's only a joke, okay? We don't endorse Jericho's wife, and we don't endorse his political donations.
Christ, no.
But endorse his wrestling. We have no choice. Let's move into talking about, so this is kind of Mox, BCC, and Hangman. I'm going to do a brief overview of kind of like the intermeshed parts, and then we'll tackle them one by one. So this week, Mox fought Takeshita on Rampage, and it was a great match, and we'll talk about it in a minute. And after the match, Hangman showed up and said, Doc Samson won't clear me to wrestle because of my brain, so I guess I got a pretty good excuse if I'm not thinking straight tonight. Started wailing on Mox. They got into a big, wrestle around the ring. Mox threw him into the ring post and kind of knocked him silly again. Then on Dynamite, we got a Mox, Claudio, and Yuta promo in which Mox set up a Rampage fight with Sammy. So we're not done with the Jazz BCC fully yet. But he also is a little bit of like him kind of being like, these are still my tough boys. I've still got my beautiful tough boys. And Claudio and Yuta did a great job of pretending to be tough boys. Mox also said Hangman knows where to find him, and we did then get a backstage health update from Hangman himself, who gave a promo to try and explain to the people of the internet why he's upset. It was a really moving promo. I thought he did an amazing job where he was talking about having that concussion and not being able to remember his son's name. So, yeah, we can start there. You guys want to talk about the hangman of it first?
Oof. I mean, it was funny because it was like, how many weeks have we had discourse over whether anybody needed that promo? And it's like, yeah, we did. It was wonderful.
It was a great promo.
And he's so beautiful.
Let them get there. Yeah. You know, like that's what I want to say to some of these people sometimes. Really, let them get there. Give them a week to get there. They're going to get there. It's going to be natural and reasonable. You're going to listen to it and it's going to be phenomenal. And Hangman is an incredible promo. He's not like a fake wrestler promo. He's not an affected gimmick promo. He's just like you said, like Jericho with the acting. He's a real person. He's acting like a real person. And I think that's why some people struggle with it, because they sort of expect that big over the top wrestling promo or character, and instead you get like, you know, serious heartache. Like you're like legit tearing up. What the heck? It was great.
Yeah. I mean, no one does it like Hangman in terms of being like, I'm just a guy and I feel things just like a normal person. And those normal feelings actually are really big and I have to express them in this like amplified realm of wrestling. It's really great. I think, yeah, I mean, it's not even worth, you know, getting into the various discourses. Like, do I think there are like things they, you know, could have set up differently? Yeah, I do. But I think this was a great promo, and that anyone who doesn't think that there is a strong like emotional storyline here, like who doesn't understand the characters, that's on you. I also really felt in that promo, like I can't put my finger on what, but I just like really felt like I saw like a little influence of Mox there. And I like just could, I mean, I just felt like I could see like you guys are talking it through about fatherhood together.
I like that. I like the idea of the two of them just talking about their kids. That's cute. Yeah.
Do you guys have any thoughts on kind of like the end game of picking back up the Mox Hangman thing, where you think we're going to end up, or like what you think it's kind of going to do for either character going forward?
I don't know where it's going to end up. And that's fun, because the first time it was like, of course he was going to lose. He wasn't going to take the belt off of Mox. But now, I mean, Mox could lose. Like, it's not out of the realm of possibility that Hangman wins this.
Yeah.
I think Hangman should win, and I think he will win. And whether it's a two more matches for a best of three, like I would like to see Hangman beat him in a straight wrestling match and then have Hangman beat him in a like a Texas death match, which I think because Moxley's like, you know, other than He Who Must Not Be Named, Moxley's other loss was to Lance Archer in a Texas death match, right? So and Hangman beat Archer in a Texas death match. So I would like to see that come back. I think that would be really cool. But I think, quite frankly, like, I think Moxley recognizes that they dropped the ball a lot on Hangman last year, you know, for various reasons, some completely non-nefarious and others perhaps slightly nefarious. And I think Moxley's like, we got to build this guy back up again. So I think he's doing that, and I can't see him doing that and not turning that into a Hangman victory, right? I also think it would be a great opportunity to finally fucking turn Moxley heel, because I think that's long overdue.
Yeah.
And I think a Hangman loss could spur that.
Absolutely. And in combination with other, like all the stuff with the BCC, the Regal stuff, like his situation with Danielson, like I think there are a lot of things that, you know, you could say like have contributed to the frustration of the character, and that like could send him into a little, you know, go murder everyone spiral, which of course I think we all want to see. And I think Mox wants to do, I think he does want to murder. I think he wants to do a lot of murder.
I think that's correct.
Well, I'm very excited to see where we go with it. Let's talk quickly about, I just want to check in what you guys think about actually that Daniel situation and the Danielson like relationship to Mox, Claudio, Yuta right now. Like, how do you think we might see that play out a little more? Like, how do you think they want us to be thinking about it right now?
I don't know. I mean, he's been so absent since like he stopped Mox from beating Regal. So it's sort of like they're deliberately not telling you where he stands. And
I thought you were about to say they're not telling us where he was. And I was like, at the hospital with Regal. Leah.
At a local medical facility, Leah. I think they have to break the BCC up a little bit. I think they have to get Danielson and Moxley away from each other, because they just don't have enough top tier guys. I think having all those guys in one faction just doesn't work.
Yeah.
I think Moxley, Claudio, and Yuta kind of being like, fuck you, Regal. And Danielson still being like, my dad, Regal, like, is a good enough reason for them to kind of break up, right? And then Danielson feeling like he has to go after MJF for revenge, and Moxley and the others not really giving a shit, I think is smart. And I quite honestly, like, play the vagueness of it. Like, you don't have to resolve it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know that I need an answer as to why Danielson's not hanging out with the BCC just yet. You could play that off a little bit more longer.
Yeah.
I mean, I really wouldn't be opposed to, like, Danielson going off and doing his own thing with Garcia in some kind of, like, tweener faction of just the two of them, right? Like, you know.
Yeah.
It's going to be, if they try to turn Moxley heel, he can't take Yuta and Claudio with him, right? Because those two couldn't.
It's too funny. It's too funny to think about.
Picture Yuta being like, yeah, murder spiral, yeah.
And we know that Yuta was a heel on the indies. We know that, but we just can't.
And he was a good one.
Picture it.
not this Yuta cannot, you know. So I'm just kind of like, all right. Like, but yeah, I'm up for anything. I think, obviously, you know, MJF doesn't have a faction, so Danielson kind of can't go into a feud with MJF with the BCC there. So I see them kind of staying apart in the until that's over, at least.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And then the final thing we'll touch on, so this circles back a little bit to what we were saying earlier about, like, future plot lines for the Elite. So Mox fought Takeshita, and they've been doing this storyline on Dark and then on this Rampage match where Don Callis is in the box scouting Takeshita during his matches. So first I'll say this match slapped. I missed it on Friday, so I just watched it today. And I did have, like just the experience of him watching. I'm like, I know this will be good. And then halfway through was like, this is great. This is so good.
Mox was being so mean to him. I was like, that's a baby and you're hurting him.
But he was so big. He's so big. This was a true classic relative sizes of men, because until I saw him next to Mox, suddenly I was like, right, Mox used to be a twink. And he still is right now, because this little twink is huge, actually, and bigger than him.
Takeshita has such twink energy, but he's so thick.
Big
he's
boy.
So thick.
He's huge.
I really want him to wrestle Max Caster because I would like to see it.
Oh, please. we got some faces on the pod, guys.
I would like to see that too.
I am obsessed with Don Callis scouting Takeshita because I think the theme of this year has been older legends adopting wrestling children. And thus far, the Elite have adopted nobody.
No.
And the idea that Don Callis is going to acquire them a baby to catch Jeff to raise is so funny, because I think that Matt Jackson has the most intense PTA mom energy that anyone has ever had. But the idea of him being a wrestling mentor in kayfabe is so funny. I'm like, no, they're gonna put him in a burlap sack and send him over a waterfall. Nobody should trust the Elite with a child.
They are gonna bully their child. I agree, because I'm like, if there were backstage, like, AEW wrestling CPS, I think that they could visit the BCC with Yuta, who they've been bullying and beating up for months, and be like, I think this is okay. And then just see Matt Jackson say one mean thing to his child, Takeshita, and be like, that's it. He's out of there. Absolutely not. You are not. He is. We'll see you in court, sir.
You need an attorney. Takeshita is so beautiful, and Moxley loves him so much. Like, I think back to, like, Moxley versus Yuta, and how Moxley gave Yuta everything. And, like, it was sort of similar to that Takeshita match where he literally says to him, kick out at one, right? And it's like, holy shit, he wanted him kick out at one. Like, Moxley just loves a wrestle son. Like, he may be the most horrifying and yet best wrestle dad that they have. But it's a great storyline. I love the idea of Don Callis being involved. Like, what's going to happen with this? The Elite have, like, five storylines sort of circling, waiting for landing. Like, you know, who's going to come in first? Is it going to be the House of Black? Is it going to be Death Triangle? Is it going to be Takeshita? Where are we going with this? Is it going to be Ibushi? Like, what's happening? Like, so much is cooking. And, like, where's Hangman? Like, fucking all of this is great.
I think it is... oh, shoot. What was I just thinking of? oh, it's completely left my head. But I agree. Like, I like this feeling, actually, like, especially now as we're talking about it, that we are in, like, a forced lull during the Death Triangle thing, or at least until now. It's been, like, nobody is ready to, like, none of the storylines are ready to, like, start exactly, but you're just starting to see so many of them percolating. And again, it just feels exciting to be like, okay, you guys have, you have thoughts, you have emotional, like, weird shit you want to do, and I want to see you do it. And if it involves Kenny's ex coming back and you guys try to adopt a child under those circumstances, yeah, that sounds like it's going to be messy. Mama wants to see it.
Oof, good. Bring me mess.
I
love mess.
In wrestling, mess is really the best thing. You got to make a big mess. Mm-hmm. And then you want to watch someone really satisfyingly clean it up. Mm-hmm. I mean, we won't really talk about the Rampage situation. Actually, I think we're going to set that aside, except just to say that Tony said that he wants Rampage to be a real TV program again, and he seems to be following through. We have quite a big few big stars, Mox, Britt Baker, OC and the Best Friends, Dustin Rhodes for some reason. Let's talk about that. That's actually what we're going to get into. They're all lined up for Rampage this week. So we'll talk about the Best Friends. OC fought Trent Seven on Rampage last week, and very fun, like, normal OC match. I think we all enjoyed. There were run-ins from the Butcher, the Blade, and the Bunny. They all have thuzz. Never thought about it. Okay. We got some, like, brawl in the back with the Best Friends. OC won. Classic OC match where then everyone in the world was like, let's beat him up afterwards. So Kip Sabian and Trent Seven were beating him up, and Dustin Rhodes came out to save OC. Do you think they put all the Trents and all the Dustins in this feud together on purpose to fuck with me?
Yes. 100%.
I think so too. And so then this week on promo, on Dynamite, we had a promo setting up an 8-man tag on Rampage that again is OC, Chuck Taylor, Danhausen, and Trent versus the Butcher, the Blade, Trent Seven, and Kip Sabian. Do we know?
It's not It's not Danhausen. It's Dustin Rhodes.
Oh right, it's Dustin Rhodes. I was looking at the wrong. No. Thank you. I appreciate it. So why Dustin Rhodes involved here?
Isn't he?
They're in Texas.
Like, yeah, but like, isn't he going to retire this year? Like,
yes.
So
yes,
in 2023.
His vibe lately is very much like, I have a bucket list, and I've done a lot for this company, and you will be letting me achieve my bucket list. And one of them is, I want to be in the middle of that hug. That's what I want.
That's very sweet. I like that framing very much, Leah.
Thank you. I'm going to get a good
drink. That's...
You got it.
I think that's correct. And I think that's, yeah. I think he wants, he does have a bucket list. And I think they wanted to give him a hometown pop, because I think they're probably not sure, are they going to be back there? Yeah. When is he retiring? How is that going to work? It made sense in the moment. And I mean, I love a little man, big man tag team combo. It's going to be fascinating.
It's going to be interesting. I want to be clear. I don't object to it. I was like, this is charmingly, it's kind of like the less sense it makes for someone to be in a Best Friends feud, the more likely it is for them to be in a Best Friends feud. So in that sense, it makes total sense. Any thoughts on Trent Seven, will we see that man again after this?
Yes.
Oh,
you think?
Yes. I think so. Yeah, I think he's there. I mean, he had a Trent Seven AEW towel, which to me, I don't monogram things unless I feel comfortable. They're gonna, just for a night or two. I don't do a monogrammed linen unless I'm.
Well, maybe it's like a when you go to someone's bachelorette party, sometimes you'll get a monogrammed little bathrobe just for the night. So it could be something like that.
I don't know what bachelorettes you're going to.
Not one that I've been to, but
I get a nip.
I see them on Pinterest.
Trent Seven looks like a big Pinterest guy.
He does. Yeah, that's probably the number one thing I thought. Yeah, was I was like, this guy's on Pinterest. I've seen this guy on Pinterest. Do you guys have any thoughts just in general on kind of like what's going on with the Best Friends in OC? you know, and what we might see coming down the pipeline for them. Like, are we going to get a full-blown new feud with Kip and stuff? What do you think?
Sarah, you should tell me the fun fact you told me yesterday about OC being a fighting champion.
Yes. So two more defenses of the All-Atlantic Championship, and Orange Cassidy will be tied the most number of men's defenses for a champion. If he gets three more wins, he will have the most title defenses of any AEW men's champion. Obviously, Jade has the most all together. So I think that's kind of a fascinating statistic that our King of Sloth style wrestles a lot. But I think to your point, we're in kind of a weird spot where Best Friends is not going to get a feud until Orange drops the belt.
Yeah.
And I think so. It's kind of like a monkey's paw situation. Right. And I don't know, you know, obviously the trios division right now is just Death Triangle versus the Elite. Forever and ever, amen.
I think and I do keep like saying.
They're kind of competing for who's going to get the House of Black, you know?
Yeah. I think I do keep saying on this podcast, I'm like, well, they really got to get some stuff going in the trios division. And then I'm like, I mean, aside from like the trios thing that they're doing, but like, it's true that you're like, they got to line some people up. I don't know. Somehow I feel like that again in like every, like the tag team division, the trios division, even the singles division. I'm like, where are the men? Where are you hiding the men, Tony? I know there are lots of them.
It's crazy. I feel like I see a new man every week. I'm constantly seeing those, this guy's All Elite signs. And yet every week I'm like, there's nobody in AEW. Nobody works there.
They're
all fucking baby faces. Yeah, they're all fucking baby faces. So, I think I'm curious as to what's going to happen with OC in the belt. I think he'll probably do a title defense against Kip Sabian. Kip needs a win, quite frankly. He's done nothing but lose since he came back, which is kind of, other than on Dark and Dark Elevation. I think his new stuff is working for him. I like the idea of teaming him with the Butcher and the Blade. Like, obviously, the Andrade family office is no more. Those guys have gone their separate ways. I think the Butcher and the Blade are a good matchup with him and Penelope, in terms of like a mid-card group.
Yeah.
But I would hate to see Kip lose, win the belt. Like, I want Orange, if he's going to lose the belt, selfishly, I want him to lose it to somebody good. And I think Kip is good. I don't want to shit on Kip, but but I also don't see, people have talked about Miro, who the hell knows? I think we could see, they might be holding off until after some of this New Japan crossover stuff. But what can I tell you? But I think I'd love for them to get a freaking feud.
Yeah, I agree. I'd like to see them like really become embroiled in something, especially since, OC he's shifted his character. Like, I think he's still pretty lazy, but the laziness comes out and like, he's like, I don't want to talk to you about whether we're going to fight. Yeah, we can just fight. We can just fight. I don't want to talk about it. I think that was a great shift for him where it's like, it comes off differently, but there are some still the same like basic like stuff going on. You know what I mean? Like, it makes sense, but it's different.
I'm also really curious about like what's going to happen when he does lose the belt, because his character will change. Yeah. Like, how's he going to do that? That's going to be fascinating. Like, I think there's so much there that, he's doing his own promos now. I mean, that's a whole new world of experience for everybody. I don't know. I think there's a lot of good stuff to this, but I know he's talking and everything. But in general, I would like to see them as a group get, like you said, more meteor storylines. The problem is like, who do you freaking put them up against?
Yeah.
They were clearly leaning towards House of Black at one point and backed off from that for some reason.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, what people want from House of Black is never that clear to me. And I think we're probably really going to wrap up after this. So maybe we can just briefly touch in on House of Black did fight the Factory this week and they won, and they did a whole new group entrance that, I thought I really liked. It was like spooky Malachi, but he brought all his friends with a little like devil red in the background. But I think that's one of the questions we raised for that too, was like, who is House of Black actually going to feud with, and like, what are we going to see from them? Because what I see from people a lot is they're like, we want House of Black to like stomp through the division, basically. And I'm just like, I guess I never thought about them that way. Like, I didn't really think about them as like big monster men who stomp through and are so powerful. Like, they're freaks. They hang out under the bleachers. They're actually so weird. You know that, right?
It's like really the idea that anyone in AEW respects them as fighters is so, and I mean in kayfabe, to be clear, like no, I don't mean like actual wrestling skill. I mean like if you were
guys, we're getting texts all the time from wrestlers. They don't want to say it on the record, but they said Malakai Black stinks at wrestling. He's not good at it.
No one cares for him.
I just like the idea of like in kayfabe, like if anybody had to like be like, oh, like what do you think of House of Black? Like all of the things that would come up would be like, they're spooky perverts, and not like, I think I might die.
Well, I might die from a goo infection. They're like, they're diseased. They'll spit on you in a match, infect your eye, and you'll never see right again. Tony should be getting them. They should be banned for medical reasons.
And it's insane that Julia now can spit the goo, even though, like, Buddy and Bronk can't do it. But Julia can.
They haven't been chosen.
Leah knows this about me, that every autumn I start to get very angry at aesthetic blogs that are just photos of leaves falling and like tea with steam coming out of it. It's just GIF sets of like fucking fall, right? Mm-hmm. And I understand that there are people that appreciate that, and I get it. And it's not my thing, or whatever. I feel like House of Black is the equivalent of like a GIF set of fall for me. Like nothing happens. Like it's vibes. Like the vibes are great, but like I need more than vibes from House of Black. Like
you're telling Malakai Black, you're hot girl autumn. You're mellow girl autumn to me. Go to Starbucks,
it's
babe.
It's antlers. It's darkness. It's pumpkin spice lattes. Well, like
to be
I'm
clear,
just over
there's
it.
Nothing wrong with antlers.
That's true. That's so true. There's nothing.
Sarah, there's nothing wrong with a good antler motif.
Are you into antlers?
Oh. It took me a while to catch on to what you were talking about. I was like, what is she talking about? Oh, she means the Young Bucks. I get it. No, I understand that there's been a lot of start and stops with House of Black for various sundrical non-kayfabe reasons. Like, I get it. But other than Buddy, no, I'm doing what you guys realize. Other than Brody King, who I love, who is a big meaty man, who I would have loved to have seen team up with Darby Allin in a tag team of Big and Little.
Yeah.
Like, Buddy has not done anything for me. Malakai has not done anything for me. And I'm just tired of like men speaking huskily in a dark room in like hushed tones about something or other and the darkness and yada, yada,
right.
Yada.
It's great ASMR. It's not always great storytelling. I agree. And I do think sometimes I do think in my heart, and I don't know what happens over there behind the scenes, and I don't know what Malakai's creative, you know, whether he's had creative issues or if so, what they've been. But the man does need an editor, and he does need an editor. And what I'll say is he does need an editor.
It's true. Can I tell you one fun fact about House Black that I learned yesterday?
Yeah.
Friend and listener of the pod, Nico, messaged me and said that she was listening to Julia Hart's episode of Unrestricted, and apparently she was the one who came up with the idea of joining House of Black. She saw them and wanted it so bad, but she was so scared to ask Malakai that she went to Jerry Lynn and asked Jerry Lynn to ask Malakai for her.
That's so sweet.
And Malakai was like, aren't you a cheerleader? And she's like, but I don't want to be. I want to be a goth freak.
I love that. That makes me happy.
Isn't that sweet?
Yeah.
That's very cute.
Well, that's a nice note to end our hate session of House of Black on. Just kidding. It's not a hate sesh, but I think we all have questions.
Yeah.
Is that safe to say?
I just feel like...
No, go ahead.
Yeah.
No, go.
No, but comparing Malakai Black to a pumpkin spice latte is not going to get any better for me. So I feel like I got to go out on a high note.
It's hard to see it as something, but it's also not nothing. You know what I mean? Well, I think that's it for us. Sarah, thank you so much for joining us this week. I had the best time getting to pick your brain in person instead of through Leah, as I usually do.
Well, if there's one thing I know about Leah, it's that she definitely shares my opinions as my opinions and does not try to pass them off as her own.
Producer Marjorie, can you cut the last 10 seconds?
On that note, I have been Allie.
I've been Leah.
And I have been Sarah.
Beautiful. And this has been Tunnel Talk. Our show is produced by Marjorie Voinovich. Our theme is by Chris Gorkin. You can find us on Twitter at Tunnel Talk Pod, via email at tunneltalkpod@gmail.com. Please rate, review, and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. And come back next week when our beautiful co-host, Anne, will return. She'll tell us about her travels, and she'll get to bash House of Black, too. So she won't miss out on that. Don't worry. And good night.